Overbooked and Opinionated is a book club for adults. We are adults who say adult things about adult books. We talk about sexy time and say bad words, so please be mindful of whoever might be listening alongside you. Content warnings can be found in the episode show notes.
Don't make me dance to a tune that you're humming. No, my body don't move yes, like that.
Welcome to
Overbooked and Opinionated,
your favorite best friend book club podcast.
With Liz
and Pooh
and Gabby.
Keep changing up the cadence. I don't know what to do about it.
I know. You never know what to expect. Oh my God. What's next? What's happening?
In case you're wondering why Gabby got immediately out of breath, it's because she was running back and forth. If you're not watching on video, sometimes it's better just to watch on video to see what kind of shenanigans we get.
You should watch us.
Gammy zoomies happen.
I had my dogs out a minute ago.
Please put them away.
Spread your pinky toe when you did that.
I hope you know
that
there's going to be at least one person on the internet who is masturbating to your foot. This was a bizarre introduction for this episode.
Well, we're doing a weird episode today.
Yeah, not that kind of weird.
What are we doing?
Alrighty, so this one needs a bit of a backstory. We're going to react to an essay today, which sounds very weird for us, but it's an essay about books. So, context. I follow, this is an influencer that I follow on Instagram, who is at Dylan Joseph Writes. I will put all of his information in the notes below. I followed him like months and months ago, maybe even over a year ago, because he posted this one rant about why can't people be kind to each other on the internet when they disagree about books you like. And I believe at the time he was specifically referencing Fourth Wing, but I don't remember. And he didn't enjoy the book. And people were like attacking him online. And he made a whole rant about like, why is this necessary? They are books. We are allowed to disagree on them. And I was like, fuck yeah, follow. That's a really interesting conversation that doesn't happen a lot on the internet, especially on Bookstagram and Book Talk. Cool. Flash forward to a month ago now, he posted this essay on his Substack. The essay is titled Anti-Intellectualism and the Commodification of Books, the Internet Culture War that Needs to be Studied. And I read this essay, got defensive and mad, but at the same time kind of understood. And I read it and immediately thought of you guys and the type of books that we read and thought that it would be a really fun conversation. So we have since now all read it. And hey, before we even get started, I'm just going to say it right now. Dylan Joseph, you are the first person who says that we need to be able to have conversations about books and not just get defensive and angry at each other. If you want to come on this podcast and talk about it, we are way more than open to it. So let us know. Our DMs are open. Let's talk about it.
So I think I will start. I think I did get a little defensive reading this initially. I love to say that I turn my brain off to read.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that he mentions in this essay very often. He says it a few times. And I think that kind of like made me want to get standoffish and defensive. And let me say that I reevaluated myself and my stance throughout reading the essay. And I think he's trying to make a good point, but failing at the execution.
Mm-hmm.
Some things I agree with, and overall, I think the message that he's sending is not something that I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's parts and there's subjects that I really do genuinely agree with, but not the way he went about writing about it.
Yeah. So we'll sum this up very briefly, but again, there will be a link to this essay in our show notes. And, we'll sum this up very briefly. It's about the modern commercialism of books. And like he talks about how modern consumerism has invaded the literature and the book space and how it's changed our definition and understanding of what literature is. And he talks about anti-intellectualism versus intellectualism and how those two terms immediately put people on the defensive. Because if you call someone an anti-intellectual, they're immediately thinking that you're calling them dumb. Yeah. And to be fair, anybody that looks at me and says you're anti-intellectual because you like Fourth Wing is probably not someone I'm going to get along with.
Correct. Fair. Valid. Heard.
But at the same time, I very much so understand the argument that is trying to be made here.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very interesting conversation. So let's like dive into the actual subject matter here.
I want to start with, he talks about the commodification of reading and he talks about book buying versus book reading.
Yes.
And I do agree that just because you buy books and you have a million doesn't mean that you're a big reader. It just means that you own a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think I can speak for myself and Pooh. I own a lot of books. I've bought a lot of books that I haven't read yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I do too.
Going to, but I haven't read them yet. So, right, like I have a few shelf trophies. Sure, absolutely. But I'm still a huge reader, not because I buy books, but because I read them. Hence the term reader. So, I don't know if this is stemming from a visual aesthetic that is on book talk and Bookstagram. Like, I feel like a lot of the book influencers on there have these humongous libraries with all of these books on them. And oh my God, how did they read all of them? Or maybe they're just like genuine speed readers who have read all of these books and own all of them. And sure, I don't know if maybe that's where this argument is kind of stemming from, because I don't know why we are aggressively pitting readers against each other.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
When he talks about, like, in reference to that, he brings up, it was an Emily Henry book that just came out.
Yes, yes,
but
yes,
he brings
big,
up
beautiful something.
The special editions.
Great Big Beautiful Life.
Great Big Beautiful Life.
I think, like, the way I, like, initially, that's how I took it, too. Like, is he just going off of, like, aesthetics, which you can't do that. But I think he's more of talking about the, all of the, not necessarily owning so much as, like, the special editions.
Yeah. Yeah. And
the art.
That's
the,
something
like,
that
you know what I mean?
We
all
talk
the different
about
things.
Quite frequently is that, like, I don't need sprayed edges for every fucking book that hits the market. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need that. And yes, like, it's encouraging like consumerism and overconsumption of books, right? For sure. I am guilty of having at least two of the same books on my shelf because I thought they were pretty, but that's like a rare occurrence for me. That's not something that I usually practice. And if it is something that people practice, who cares?
I don't think books are the reason that the environment is collapsing.
No. And like, so he does make a great point that we are mad at the producers and the publication companies.
You know, I think it's actually very interesting because I brought this up in front of a group of authors mistakenly, like an idiot once, about how frustrated I was. And this was right after Onyx Storm came out. And do you guys remember when Onyx Storm released? There were like three different special editions that released that they announced before the book even came out. And I was like, that's so annoying because like, I just want to get my hands on this book and I would love to have my hands on the beautiful copy of it. But like, I'm not going to buy three copies of the book to own everything. That's annoying. That's frustrating. And one of the authors corrected me and she was like, here's the way I think of it when it comes to my books. And she was a spicy romance author. She says, I release, every time I release a book, I release three different editions of my book. I release a book that could be read absolutely anywhere by anyone and you would never know what it is. It's just like a black cover or like a simple cover that like could be the cover for anything. I release an edition that's more aesthetic, that's more marketed towards what's popular on Bookstagram and BookTok right now, something with sprayed edges and foil and all that stuff. And then she releases an edition with a shirtless man on the cover because sometimes that's exactly what their readers want on their sexy books. And I was like, you know what? She's releasing her editions specifically for the person that's going to want to buy them. And she's not saying you need to own every copy, but she's trying to make sure that all of her readers have a copy of this book that they're gonna love,
that they want,
and I get that. That I feel like is a fantastic reason, but the idea of commercializing special editions of like you got to collect them all, it's like turning them into Pokemon essentially.
Yeah,
I understand being frustrated with. So that's
and I get that, but I that's a reader's choice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I don't feel like that choice should be taken away. And to in it he kind of comes. He's like, oh, I sort of blame publishers, and I get what he's saying. But honey, you have to be realistic. They're publishing to make money.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's what it is. It's a market. That's what they're doing. That's their job. So the whole goal of publishing these works is stuff they think they're projecting is going to make money.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there is money that has to be made in books, in literature.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is somebody needs to make an income. Authors wouldn't spend all the time they spent giving us these stories if they couldn't profit off of it. Because there would be no time.
Yep. I literally am going to put this in the edit of the video. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with making money off of what you spend your time and money on. But I do find it ironic that literally right under the sentence in this essay, it can all be boiled down to, and you guessed it, say it with me, consumerism is the line where his subscription boxes saying that So It Goes is a reader-supported publication. If you want to receive exclusive posts and support his work, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber. Literally right under the consumerism. Why are we judging so harshly the idea of consumerism when it quite literally, whether we like it or not, is what drives industries like this? Like, you are literally asking for money because literally everyone on the planet needs money to pay for their existences. That's just the way society is run right now.
I agree. And I also want to say we're in this this piece of the essay, we're talking about the passion for books versus passion for literature. Mm-hmm. And he makes a statement here and it says, but to completely immerse yourself in a cast of characters and the purpose of a story, you are not meant to turn your brain off. You're just not. And I think you're confusing the terminology that we're using here. When we say I'm turning my brain off, obviously we're not doing that for the book that we are reading, right? We are purposefully focusing on this book, this cast of characters, this story, this epic story that we're following, and we're turning our brains off to the real and exhausting bullshit that we are experiencing in our real lives. And it is completely unfair to judge a group of people who do that to survive, to feel good about themselves, to maybe lessen the hardships of their own life just a fraction, just a hair, for that 10 minutes that that person gets to read a day. Like, why are we doing that? Mm-hmm. Like, when you're associating, I'm turning my brain off with, I'm going to be dumb. And that's not the case. Like, that's not the case. And I think that terminology there is something that is kind of being flung around. Well, you said it. You said you're turning your brain off.
Yeah.
Obviously not to the story, if that's what I'm actively consuming.
Yeah. I want to read a quote from this essay as well that's really, really, like, relevant to this. So he says, reading is a privilege, and I believe we've forgotten that. It's a privilege that should never be taken lightly. For many, books are one of the few tools of transformation. Turning your brain off to read is a luxury not everyone has. Literature is meant to challenge, reflect, and change us, not just comfort us, and we mustn't forget that. Whose definition? Who is the person that says literature is meant to challenge, reflect, and change us, not just comfort us? That might be what you try to get out of your books that you choose to read.
Yes.
But that doesn't have to be what everyone gets out of their own personal reading
experience. Everyone doesn't have to read for the same reasons.
Absolutely.
Right. And there's no saying that it's not necessarily like reading with your brain off that comforts you, but just because you're being comforted by reading, like for me, the act of reading is comfortable. It's a safe space for me, you know, like it's just where I am, but it doesn't mean it didn't change me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I would say I turned my brain off to read like ACOTAR, but I still loved it enough that I have a tattoo from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it didn't change me. It's not that it didn't.
It's a piece of art that you appreciate. Yeah,
it's not that it didn't, you know, like, it's not that I didn't feel, I didn't think, I didn't reflect. It turning my brain off is because it's not my struggles. It's not what I'm going through. It's how I'm getting through my own struggles. That's not to say that I'm not recognizing that there's others. And when he talks about, like, you know, ignoring, like, immigrants and their stories and stuff, they're still in them stories.
Yes.
They're still part of them books.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was like a big thing that I actually wanted to touch on. But quick, I just want to mention the point where he mentions that reading is a privilege.
Yeah.
Reading in itself is a fundamental right for every human being. The right to literacy is not a privilege. What is a privilege is the access to education. So I get if you're trying to say that, you know, being able to read stories that make you comfortable is a privilege when people are out there struggling and living real lives and experiencing real life stories. Reading is not a privilege. Reading is a right that we all should be afforded. The privilege is where our lack of education, our socioeconomic status kicks in, and the access to literacy. That is where the privilege comes in.
I think I unfortunately might have to argue with you a bit. I 1000% agree that it should not be a privilege. There are 1000% countries where literacy is intentionally kept away from different people, like from women, from children, from like different minorities. And the unfortunate reality is not everybody has access to the same just sheer quantity of books and literature and essays and poems that we do in like Western civilization. However, just because we have access to those kinds of books and whatever, any type of literature, does not mean that because we can read more, we all should be reading only think pieces about how hard the world is. Like, we have the right to read whatever the fuck we want, in my personal opinion. And I don't know why somebody reading something that you didn't enjoy, because this is not Dylan Joseph on his page talks a lot about V.E. Schwab, which is a fantasy author that I personally enjoy a lot too. But like, why is V.E. Schwab, your books that you love to talk about, any more worthy than a book like Fourth Wing or ACOTARD that other people love just as vehemently as you do your books? That's what I don't get.
You have to view books the way you view art. Like, everything's not for everybody. Every piece does not hit home for everybody. But what art means to you is personal, and nobody should be able to put that, like a certain stigmatism on the way you should view art, because that's what books are. They're art. And you shouldn't have to view a certain art because people think it's right, because they think that, well, that's what I like and that's what I believe is right, so that's what you should. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. It's not fair to ask anybody to view it a certain way. I should be able to read whatever I want, yeah, whatever themes I want. And I think every book, fiction, every book is knowledge.
Yeah.
Even fiction. Yeah. And there's times where maybe it's not like educational knowledge, but it is emotional. It is empathetic knowledge. It teaches you to be a person, to be all of them. Fictional stories are just as important. And I don't think you get to tell somebody, well, you're not, you know, educated in literacy because you're not reading what I deem worthy.
Literature. Correct. And I think, too, it's really big to note that literature is quite literally defined as an art that is nonfiction, fiction, poetry. Like, literature can exist in many spheres and mean something very different to everyone. And while I think this piece was supposed to be written from a balancing point of view of like pros and cons of both sides, I think he missed the mark. And I think he makes it very obvious which side he wants to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to pick a side. You don't have to pick a side. And you shouldn't. You really shouldn't put yourself in a box like that, because literature is quite literally huge. There is such a mass amount of literature out there that to just put yourself in a box of like, I only read smut, you're gonna miss, well, in my opinion, like you would miss out on some really great pieces of art, but they might not see it that way, and that's okay. But like, you're obviously picking a side, and there's not really a side to be picked. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to make this conversation about literature, be on the side of literature, and literature is for everyone and however they deem it in their own opinion.
So I'm going to read like the opening comments that he wrote about what an intellectual is and what anti-intellectualism is. Excuse me. So he says, "What classifies an intellectual, in quotes, is a debate for another time. But what we can glean from this definition regarding discourse online is this. It is the divide between those who read to turn their brains on and those who wish to turn their brains off."
I know.
I'm sorry, guys. We're all not intellectuals.
I know. I think that it's obvious how he feels about literature and that these books are supposed to be informative in some type of way and face socioeconomic issues. Like, mm-hmm. that's yeah. kind of the tone that I'm getting.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this one other quote about anti-intellectualism, and then I've got some thoughts. So he says, however, at face value, the term anti-intellectualism seems jarring and harmful. Many hear this term and believe you are calling them dumb. But for most, it is heard as one person putting themselves on a pedestal over another simply for the content they consume. But it's not that. It's not a hostility towards thinking. Instead, it is the lack of passion for literature itself. Maybe by your definition of what literature is,
so
Mr.
actually,
Dylan Joseph.
Since you said that, later on, he says literature is meant to challenge, reflect, and change us, not just comfort us. Why can't fiction change us?
Oh, that's a really
Why
fun conversation.
Why can't that change the person you are? Why can't it let you reflect? Because I know sometimes, like to bring up ACOTAR again, we all compared, you know, our favorite of the Shadow Daddies and like characters and stuff. And I love Nesta and you hated Nesta and you don't really, you know what I mean? We're all different, but I reflected on why I like, not like Nesta because I don't like Nesta, but why I liked her story. And I like reading is meant to be, literature is meant to be, I think, what the reader wants to get out of it.
Which is why it is so amazing to be immersed into literature. Mm-hmm. Quite literally, that is why it is so amazing to be immersed there. Because it is whatever you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no rules. There is no one way to be a reader. And there's not one way to, like, drink in literature. You can do it however you want to. And can I say that the fantasy books that I've read have really, like, they're based off of real life. Can I say that? Is that fair? I mean, you have these women who are suppressed. Correct. Ding, ding, ding. That's happening in real life every single day. We live it every single fucking day. Except now I'm seeing it where the woman wins. It doesn't happen in real life. And I'm seeing these like really amazing things that really duplicate what is happening in the real world, but with a magical spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
This is literally, there are hundreds of thousands of essays on this topic and books and like mountains and mountains of literature on the topic of how fantasy is a digestible allegory for modern day struggles that make them digestible and doable for the average consumer in a way that reading a memoir written by somebody who's gone through these horrible circumstances probably couldn't be palatable for everybody.
Yeah.
That was a very poorly worded way of saying that, like, fantasy is an allegory. That doesn't mean it's any less impactful. Just because there are dragons in my book about racism doesn't mean that it's any less
about racism.
Yeah.
That's still what the theme is, what the important message is. And it's okay to get these messages from, you know, like Tom Hardy, Emily Bronte, right? Those classics, they're so good. But in their time period, were they not this brain rot?
Ooh. That's an interesting take.
That's exactly
actually
what they were.
I just read How to Read Novels like a Professor by Thomas C. Foster. It's sitting right over there. That's why I'm pointing. He actually has this really interesting take in the beginning when he explains the history of the novel about how what we consider modern classic, like old time classics, like the things that we talk about endlessly, they were literally soap operas for the Victorian England era. Like literally they released chapter by chapter once a week in the newspapers that everybody was consuming, like literal as garbage brain rot. But now we consider them classic literature because there's a different time frame around them and because they were so new at the time. It's all about the time that you're currently in. But, you know, it's so frustrating to be told that because there's dragons in my book, despite the fact that it tackles incredibly heavy topics like suicide, like racism, like things about government totalitarianism and fascism.
Grief.
Because grief.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it's reskinned in a way that's not modern fiction and memoirs. It's somehow less literature to some people, to the intellectuals of the world. And it's really upsetting because I've never considered myself an intellectual. I didn't graduate college. I just like to read books and I have since I was a little kid. But like being called an anti-intellectual because I don't enjoy the same books as you and because I don't gravitate towards memoirs because I think life is difficult enough without having to read those consistently. I do. And I'm not saying we have to like pull out our books that we've read to like justify that I am a reader because I've read Oscar Wilde. But like, it's a very frustratingly narrow take and it bothers me.
Yeah. It's like a very one-way side of like looking at how people digest literature, mm-hmm. you know? And I just think that why do you care? Why do you care? Just like, why do you care what other people are doing with their free time? I think if you can get one person to pick up any book, congratulations. Like, welcome. Welcome to being a reader. Like, yeah. You don't have to hit a milestone. You can read one book in a year, and it could be Ice Planet Barbarians. And you are a reader, my friend. Like, it doesn't matter. And I think he's very caught up in the terminology and the things that people, mainly women, use to like describe their reading habits, like brain rot. And turning your brain off doesn't mean that we are dumb, and it doesn't mean that we're anti-intellectualism. It's a terminology that other people are understanding and they get it. And the world is very hard right now. And they definitely don't need to be shit on for their reading taste.
And this is like related but off topic at the same time. But the way he's examining these books specifically, this genre, this era, it's not fair that you didn't also analyze these women. Ask why their lives are so hard that they brain rot it. And this is a little off topic, but also not, because a lot of these women, there's a lot of them that are stay-at-home moms. Mm-hmm. Well, do you know how hard it is to be a parent 24/7 with no space, with no, someone's touching you all the time, you're serving someone all the time? So in the sense that you're saying these women aren't intellectual because they read these brain rot books, well, maybe I read these books and I'm going to breed a better child than you would, because I'm more empathetic, because I have a better outlook on emotion than you do.
Because you're able to frame your empathy and understand that other people don't have the exact same experience as you.
Because I can extend it to so many lengths because I've read. And he, in there, he talks about reading like 6 stories with the same main character. Okay, maybe I do. But every time I read it, I still reflected on the way that character acted, mm-hmm. the reason that character was the way they were. And, you know, maybe I'm more emotionally in touch than someone who is maybe reads more, you know, nonfiction knowledgeable books. Maybe you have more knowledge. It's fine. But I understand people mm-hmm. better than you do.
And let me reframe just like what I said before, because I said it doesn't mean we're dumb. Right. And that's something that he does say. And when he talks about the definition of anti-intellectualism and the terminology, he does specifically say, quote, "However, at face value, the term anti-intellectualism seems jarring and harmful. Many may hear this term and believe you are calling them dumb, but for most, it is heard as one person putting themselves on a pedestal over another simply for the content they consume. But it's not that. It's not a hostility towards thinking. Instead, it is the lack of passion for literature itself." You are basing this argument over your own definition of literature, because these people that read brain rot books and who turn their brain off for books are passionate about them. They are passionate about them. I think you have to have a certain amount of passion to base your entire social media presence over books. Like, that is passion for literature. It's not your definition. It's not the way that you like to see it, but that's passion. And absolutely. You also make comments about how, like, you were talking about this yourself, where people are so passionate about the books that they read and the books that they love that when they see someone else putting that book down, they feel so passionately for this book that they just have to comment mm-hmm. and say, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" And they start attacking people based off of, you know, disagreements in the type of books that they like. That is a form of passion over literature.
Yeah.
So What is it? You can't have both. You can't have, like, brain rot is anti-intellectualism, but then say to me that the definition is a lack of passion for literature when they are clearly showing that they are passionate about literature. It's just in a way that you don't deem worthy.
Yeah.
I just think that the way this essay was produced just wasn't getting the point across, because I think fundamentally we are agreeing on the basis of consumerism. I think we are agreeing on that. And he does say, quote from his passage again, "It is not meant to shame readers, but to interrogate how online book culture has shifted our understanding of what it means to love books." That is your message. And I think, yes.
Yeah.
But the way that this is written is not giving that. It's very much giving elitist. It's very much giving judgmental. It's very much giving, like, you should read things that are classified as true literature. Well, what is that?
Yes.
What is that? And how do you define that?
He says this in this essay: "Reading a brain rot book doesn't strip your reader card away, but it restricts you from reading the stories begging to be heard and need to be heard." And I will say that there is some validity to the point that, like, fast fiction definitely does exist. There are thousands of books being published right now that he's not wrong do have typos and misspelling and, like, pacing correct issues and all of these things. But, like, why do those books deserve to be published any less than any of your books that you define as true literature? Yeah, the market is being flooded with more fast fiction, as he calls it. But, like, that doesn't mean that the rest of those books aren't out there or that there isn't a platform for them as well. And yeah. I think that's what frustrates me. I can understand being frustrated that our Instagram feeds and our TikTok feeds are entirely filled with, like, these romantic-y books that do feel a lot of the times like a copy and paste of A Court of Mist and Fury or whatever's popular at the time. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that reading them is wrong for anybody who enjoys that kind of fiction. And it doesn't mean that the other books are any less valid either. They still exist. They just aren't having their moment in the sun right now like romantic-y is.
Right. And I think he also says, however, the real harm comes from glorifying intellectual apathy. I have brain rot, so I only read brain rot books, LOL, rather than curiosity. I just think that you're using this terminology very strictly. And I don't think that's necessarily fair. Like, brain rot is a funny term that people use on the internet. And that doesn't mean that they're not being curious about the books that they're reading. And they're posting to an audience. That doesn't mean they're not reading these books that you might deem as literature, right? Like, we talk about romantic-y books on this podcast. We talk about romance. We talk about fantasy. That doesn't mean that the three of us aren't reading books outside of that. That doesn't mean that we're not reading books that aren't brain rot. Like, that's just what we're showing to our audience because that's where the demand is right now. So, like, I get it. At your core, I think we want to change that market, right? I think that's where you're getting. But at the same time, like, just like we shouldn't care about who's sleeping with who and who you choose to love, you should not care about what people are reading. Like, it's just none of your business and who cares? Like, they're talking about brain rot on the internet. Who cares? I talk about brain rot on the internet. I talk about brain rot on my podcast. But, you know, I read memoirs. I read pharmaceutical, like, I'm going through Johnson & Johnson's story right now, which is crazy. But, like, I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to say, like, I read these books, so, you know, chill out. I also enjoy literature. It's all literature.
I think, honestly, I'm definitely open. Like, I really do want Dylan to come on this podcast and have a conversation with us about it. But genuinely, if he doesn't come and defend this one quote that I literally made Gammy write down,
yep, you ready?
I'm gonna have to unfollow and be done with this because this was
so he,
really wrong.
Posted a reel and
which was funny, to be honest.
Was, yeah, I like the
It was a bit about is it worth the girth? And he rated so books that had long page counts about whether or not they were worth the long commitment
funny,
to a book.
Right? Because it's a euphemism for big dicks.
Thank you, Gary, for explaining that.
Right? But hold on, because I'm saying, like, we're talking about how a lot of this shit that we're saying on the internet, like, I'm turning my brain off. That doesn't mean I'm not actually focused and passionate and reading the story. It just means that, like, It's just a saying, my guy. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about books that are worth the girth. That's just a euphemism. So are we like calling you out for being very specific with the terminology that you're choosing to use? No. So the quote from this video is, talking to people that don't agree with me is like talking to a wall.
I'm not going to go in detail about why, because talking to people who don't agree with me is like talking to a wall. It's worth the girth.
Yeah, that.
And so like
pissed me off, honestly, more than this entire essay. Just that one brief sentence, which I believe was meant to be satirical and wasn't meant sincerely, was very, very frustrating for somebody who touts that we need to be able to have conversations about books without attacking each other.
Yeah, because that's like basically what he's saying.
So inflammatory. That's what he's
trying to say, right? I wasn't very impressed. And I also just like, I don't like that this was supposed to be like I'm in the middle and this is like my point of view, but it was just so obvious that we're leaning a little bit more towards elitism than, you know, mm-hmm. not. And that's kind of true when he quotes here, like, it's not about reading quote unquote bad books. It's about never being given or seeking the space to grow into deeper ones. What is a deeper book to you?
Yeah.
Like, what is a deeper book to you? Oh my goodness. Like, mm-hmm. this is all just relative to perspective.
In mm-hmm. one of these sections says, many do not know the origins behind the term anti-intellectualism. Most are not accustomed to the idea that anti-intellectualism is a tool used by totalitarian governments to squash political dissent. Many do not know that intellectualism inherently keeps society standing tall under the boot of oppressors. At its core, it is a trend throughout history that without logic or reasoning, people can easily be controlled. I don't know if it's just me, but at least in Romanesi, because it's usually like some type of war-torn, very oppressed main character, that's the whole point. You're not going to control me. You're not going to tell me what I can do because I'm a woman mm-hmm. or I'm different or I'm not from here or I'm not, you know, like violent. I'm not strong enough to be a writer. You're not going to tell me that. I'm going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that doesn't really hit that it's making you dumber and easier to control.
Yeah. He does say at the end, we can love books and still push ourselves towards something more profound. Again, what is profound to you? Like, this, again, is to you. That is a story that is profound to you. That has many different meanings to everyone. So
I might make the argument that somebody that can find a profound message that deeply changes them from something like Ice Planet Barbarians, to use the reference you did earlier, might be a little more higher up on the intelligence list than somebody who can take it from something that is obviously going to be profound. Yeah,
there's something that's beating you over the head with.
And mm-hmm. then it says, it's not about gatekeeping on either end. It's about remembering that books aren't just products and reading isn't just content. It's art, and art, when we let it, can still change us. You're saying what we're saying, but taking it
completely juxtaposed to what you already said.
Right. Right, right, right. You can't like have it both ways. I think your beef is with Bookstagram pushing out constant fluffers, but like also mm-hmm. who cares what other people read?
Yeah. I get the idea that us being flooded with romanticy and like all that right now is pushing other books down on most people's TBRs because that's not what's popular right now. But like, why would you judge an author who's been writing for their whole lives or who even was inspired and decided to write something now with the current trend for publishing something while it's popular? When like, if down the line, maybe memoirs have a comeback and they're having their moment in the sun and other people decide to write their experience. I don't understand why romanticy and like what he calls brain rot is any less valid than those.
That argument though, rather than comparing these books and these different readers, it sounds more like the fight you should be having is analyzing the way that social media is changing what you read.
Correct.
That's mm-hmm. what you Correct. Should be looking at, because it does. It's true.
The beef
it
is does with push social up these media. Fluffers. The beef is with social media. The beef is with like this pretense that they share these books to the masses.
Yeah.
And then you read it and the book's shit. Yeah. Okay. We've fallen victim to that a few times. But that might be someone's favorite fucking book. Mm-hmm. And good for you.
Example A.
Good for you.
Quicksilver.
Yeah, Quicksilver. Hated it. Didn't like it. But like, I'm not like,
and I loved it.
I'm not sitting here like, you two drank. I can't say that. You two fell for it and you guys are just like, you
can say
drank
the Kool-Aid. It's okay.
Okay. You two drank the Kool-Aid and like, you know, no, it literally doesn't matter. You two found joy in a book that I did not. And that's great for you guys.
Mm-hmm. I am really glad that we got to have this conversation. And I'm honestly very thankful to Dylan Joseph for writing that essay, because I think it was very, despite me being defensive initially, I think it was actually a very thought-provoking one. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to say that a lot of the hate that he gets online is not fair. You don't have to attack people who don't like the same books as you. He's 1,000% right on that.
And attacking like, people for like, who they are based off of, like, come on, please be so for real. Like,
But
we're adults. Can you like have a conversation where you disagree about something and just fucking move on? Like he does say, like, it doesn't have to be an argument. You're correct. It can just be a conversation. And you know, like, you guys have had conversations with me about books that I didn't like where you've mentioned something and I'm like, huh, yeah, I didn't see it like that. You know what? If I did see it from that lens, that would be pretty interesting. Still didn't like it. But we can like have a conversation about it. So yes, in that regard, absolutely correct. But in the same breath, you are supporting the one thing that you're also talking shit about. And you really can't have it both ways. If you're going to be mad at Bookstagram and Book Talk, like, you got to do it.
Yeah,
you got to do it. You can't also contribute to the fast fiction or however he said it. You know what I mean? You can't also do it. Because then like...
Yeah. And I'm gonna call you out a little bit. You are a person with free will. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to come on your podcast. On our podcast, excuse me.
His own.
And I know your own. And I know we don't have a huge following. We don't have a lot of a listener base, but I think there's a very interesting conversation to be had. And if you're as into having actual conversations without attacking each other, come on and let's talk about it.
Yeah, we're nice.
We actually are.
We're friends.
Not to each other, but to other people.
No, to other people, we are nice.
Yeah. All right. I think we're going to call it there. That was a really heavy one, guys.
I know. I think we did a good job, though. And I would be really interested to see what, you know, he has to say about it. And what do you guys think? Like, what are your thoughts?
The link to this will be in the episode description.
I will say that people listening to our podcast are probably going to be on our side because they're not.
I don't even know if there's a clear our side versus his side.
No,
it's just
a
really interesting and nuanced debate. Like
we agree on a lot of parts of this. I just think the delivery wasn't there. And I think some parts are just a little. Don't love. Let us know. Let us know what you think, because we want to hear it. And again, go to the link. Check out his page. Go ahead and check out. Yeah. Read the essay for yourself. Come to your own conclusions and let us know. Do you disagree with us?
Yeah. Is there any part of what we said that you don't agree with? And one thing I just want to make very clear, as I said, we don't have a huge listener base. Our followers are not massive. But this is not us in any way, shape, or form saying it's okay or encouraging anyone to go over to his page and say negative, hurtful things to him.
Correct. You are not an O&O girly if you're out there spreading hate.
Damn
you
straight.
Are not. We don't do that here.
We don't have hate in this. Well, we have hate in this book club, but not for other people.
Just for each other. Just for each other. And Quicksilver. And on that note, goodbye.
Fucking hate you for sliding that in there.
Don't make me dance to a tune that you're humming. No, my body don't move like that. Don't make me
dance. Ooh, that was a heavy one, huh? But honestly, this is exactly why we started this podcast. Not just to have the easy, wonderful conversations with wonderful authors and people in this industry like Inez last episode, but also to have these difficult conversations about the book community and its current state, and maybe say the things that we're all thinking, if not saying out loud. And hey, if you disagree with us, that's okay too. We still love you. You're still welcome here. Speaking of which, if you enjoyed this episode, please take a second to rate, review, and follow the podcast. It helps to get us into more ears, and it keeps these chaotic book club vibes alive. And we really do want to hear your take. Do you think brain rot books are harming literature, or are they just as valid as any quote-unquote serious novel? Come tell us over on our socials. Speaking of which, we are at overbooked.opinionated on Instagram. We are on TikTok at overbookedopinion, and we are on Facebook at overbookedandopinionated. Finally, you can find us on our website at overbookedandopinionated.com, where you can find full transcripts, show notes, and just more behind-the-scenes chaos. We're ready for the hot takes. Just, you know, be nice. Alrighty, guys, I'm gonna go turn my brain off with a book now. Bye! Bye.